All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman. Today, I'm giving you my rapid reaction to the Falcons' 34-7 loss in their preseason finale against the Miami Dolphins, taking a deep dive into these last roster decisions as the Falcons prepare to cut down the roster from 90 to 53.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. I've been covering the Falcons for a very long time at FalFans.com, over 10 years on Twitter at FalFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today we are talking about the Falcons' 34-7 preseason loss to the Miami Dolphins. Falcons now drop to 0-4 in the preseason. Go ahead and panic. Definitely means that the Falcons are definitely going to fail this season. No, I'm being very sarcastic, if you can't tell from the flat tone of my voice. We're not going to talk too much about this performance. It was a very ugly, sloppy performance. Very few positive standout performances in this game for the Falcons. They lost 34-7. They dropped to a 21-0 deficit about 12 minutes into the game. Multiple turnovers. They only had like two first downs in the first half. They had 10 penalties. Just a lot of really bad football. We had Joseph Harris on a recent fan talk talking about how he was going to go to this game. Sort of warned him that this would be some really bad football. He got his $66 worth, I guess, of really bad football. If you know, the inverse of quality is what he wanted. So, you know, rest in peace, Joe. So most of today's episode, we will be focusing pretty much on the roster stuff and you know, we'll touch upon some sort of the standout performances from this Dolphins game. Many of you might be listening to this podcast late on Friday or Saturday, and you probably already know maybe some of the Falcons' cuts. In the past, they've done it where, like, they will cut the, you know, I think they had to cut 37 players to get down from 90 to 53. You know, one of the ways that they have done it in the past is to cut, like, 25 guys on Friday. The guys that they don't really necessarily plan to bring back to the practice squad, that leaves them about a dozen guys to try to sneak past waivers on Saturday at the deadline at 4 p.m. Eastern and try to sneak those guys. You know, it's probably not a hugely worthwhile strategy, but I'm sure, you know, it makes a minor difference and maybe has been effective in the past. So we'll see if the Falcons employ that. So keep that in mind if you're listening to this. At a certain time, you already know the cuts. You know, you're basically time traveling back into the past when I was recording this, you know, after midnight on Friday morning without any of that foresight. You know, the interesting thing about this game was the Falcons probably tipped their hand on what their intended 46-man roster is going to be during the season, because they were basically 46 players that sat out this game. Now, that did not include Josh Harris. That did not include Isaiah Oliver. But if you add in those two players, that gives you 48. You take out one of the offensive linemen who, you know, they won't have eight active offensive linemen. They'll only have seven. And then maybe take out Leon McFadden, who was, you know, inexplicably inactive in this game. That gives you basically the 46-man roster. So that sort of was telling us that, you know, there were maybe five or six positions up for grabs tonight, depending on what you think about Leon McFadden. We'll touch upon that later. The notable things about the players that were inactive that presumably have made the team, if you assume that those 46-ish guys are pretty much locked for the team, Ricky Ortiz did not play. He did dress, but he did not play. We saw only Jostin Fowler at fullback, so presumably Ricky Ortiz won the battle. We saw Ty Sambrello did not play. Austin Pastore did, so presumably Ty Sambrello will be the swing tackle for the Falcons. He was one of the eight offensive linemen, along with Wes Schweitzer, the five starters, and Ben Garland. We did not see Marvin Hall. He was the sixth wide receiver that was inactive. We did not see Justin Bethel or Leon McFadden. We did see Bleedy Ray Wilson. And we'll touch upon that. He did get injured in this game. We'll touch upon that later. It presumably, if you assume that the Falcons return specialist battle that was up for grabs all summer, the two guys that, one of the guys that's going to return kicks, one guy that's going to return punts, or maybe one guy does both, is among the inactives, then, you know, does that mean that Marvin Hall is going to be the week one return specialist? Maybe. Maybe Ridley's on kickoffs and Hall's on punts. Maybe Hall's on kickoffs and Hardy's on punts. Maybe Hall does both. Who knows? You know, we did see Oliver out there, return the first punt in this game. That, you know, we saw Dontez Bird. We saw Reggie Davis. That makes me think that Oliver's out of the mix, as many people opined after his muffed punt last week. So we'll see if that changes. He did not do much on that return. So even if the door hadn't been closed on him going into the game, it probably got closed on him coming out of the game. So going back to what I said earlier, probably 6 roster spots up for grabs. Basically, I figure those doing the math on the Falcons roster, those would be the 9th offensive lineman, the 9th defensive lineman, the 6th linebacker, and the 9th DB. That's 4. And then 2 quote-unquote grab bag positions, which could be any position. Basically, the best players available. The next 2 best players available, potentially 1 on offense and 1 on defense. My personal opinion on what those grab bag, in air quotes, positions would be, that would be a 10th offensive lineman. And on defense, I think it's probably a 10th defensive back. We'll break those down in a moment. But first, I want to let you guys know that it is right now crunch time for fantasy football, and the Locked On Podcast Network is delivering. Locked On has a brand new fantasy show that's Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7. Fantasy Football 24/7 will give you the latest trends, the hottest roster moves, and where to get that extra advantage. Plus, you get Ethan Turner, the injury expert. He's going to give you that extra edge that you guys need. Locked On Fantasy Football is here to help you guys win your league. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So, let's talk about the 9th and 10th offensive line. Now, if you've been listening the last couple of weeks on this podcast, I've been pretty clear that I think Matt Gano and Sean Harlow are going to be those guys. I feel like, you know, looking at this game, Gano did not perform well. He had a very rough outing. I had some tweets early on Thursday afternoon talking about Gano's upside, but talking about his rawness. I think all those things were really on display against Miami. You know, the question marks about his footwork, his punch, his technique, all those things that I had questions in those tweets, I think, you know, were put on full display in Thursday evening's game. And, you know, for a second, we'll take a moment to talk deep dive in player evaluation, just because I think, you know, it's easy for me to sit here and be like, Matt Gano's raw, but you guys don't understand why I think that. And I think, you know, one of the things that you like about Matt Gano, one of the reasons why you're so attracted to Matt Gano, at least I am, evaluating him, is his mobility, is his athleticism, is his movement. You know, one of the knocks that you do have, or at least I have, on Ryan Schrader is that he's not a great blocker on the move. And when you play this outside zone scheme, like, you want guys that are really great at moving. That's one of the reasons why, you know, Jake Matthews is such a great fit. Schrader is okay on the move, but it's not really his strength. He's much better when he can go straight at a defender. Gano isn't like that. Gano is really great moving. He's a really good fit in the outside zone scheme. He's going to be really great at making those reach blocks because he has those movement abilities, that athleticism. You know, you like his feet. He's got quick, smooth, athletic feet, but he needs a lot of work with the actual technique of his footwork. He has a tendency to cross his feet, and what that does is that gives an offensive lineman a narrow base, and you want that wide base when you're doing your kick slide, because then you can anchor against power. Basically, when you cross your feet, it's much easier for you to give ground, and you can go and experiment yourself by putting your feet ankle shoulder width apart or wider and have someone try to push you over. It's going to be harder for them. It's going to take more force for them to push you over if you have a wider base than if you put your feet a few inches apart and then they try to push you over. I think his punch needs to improve. I think he needs to improve with his hand placement so that when he does make contact, it stops the defender dead. It redirects that defender. He's able to lock on. That was something that he struggled with, particularly in this Miami game. He struggled with that in other games. It was a little hit and miss. And you saw it on display on a couple of the times where he gave up sacks or gave up pressure in this Dolphins game. The technique thing is really about his ability to stay square. And what that means is when you're an offensive lineman and you're doing your kick slide, that when you're trying to stay in front of that edge rusher who's rushing the quarterback, you want your chest, you want your torso, the front of your chest to stay parallel to the line of scrimmage. You want it to be facing forward, even though your hips and your legs may be, you know, slightly at an angle, trying to move out at that angle to get and stay in front of that speed rusher. You want your chest to stay parallel to the line of scrimmage. You don't want to be perpendicular. You don't want to be turning your shoulders to the point that they're no longer parallel to the line of scrimmage. And because of what that does is then you lose sort of, you become half a body or three quarters of a body, and you're basically giving ground to that defender. You're going to lose leverage because you're not blocking with your full body as opposed to half a body. So those are the things that were specific skills, the specific traits that when I say things like Gano is raw or, you know, he's got upside, but he's not ready. That's what I'm talking about. Those are the things. Like, if you don't get those things down, NFL edge rusher is going to eat you alive. If God forbid there's an injury to Jake Matthews or Ryan Schrader, and you put Matt Gano in the game in that situation, he's going to get Chaz Green until he gets those things fixed. And you know what I mean when I say Chaz Green. Like, you put him against DeMarcus Lawrence or Terrell Suggs, Chandler Jones, Carl Lawson, Cameron Jordan, those guys are going to destroy him. They're going to absolutely destroy him until he fixes those things. And he needs time to develop those things. That was one of the things when we talked about it. That's one of the reasons why he was undrafted. It's not because he lacked the athleticism to play in the NFL. It was simply because he had a lot of raw tools that, you know, he's a raw piece of clay that you're going to have to mold. And it's going to take time for that to do that. But I still think, that being said, he should be kept on the roster along with Harlow. I think both guys are young offensive linemen that have upside. Whether or not they turn into future starters, I think that remains to be seen. I'm not going to necessarily put that expectation on those guys until I see that sort of growth where we're going to be looking at these guys dominating second string, you know, defensive linemen in, you know, future preseasons and whatnot. Like, then, you know, talking about them being a starters, I think, is getting a little premature. They have the upside and the potential to be so, but don't necessarily count your chickens, you know, before they hatch and whatnot. But I think at the very least, they can be quality backups. And why that's important and why that's valuable is because if they turn into quality backups, that's now two draft picks that you don't have to use over the next 2 years or whatever on basically backup level players. As we've suggested, I think I've said it on this podcast, if you're going to take an offensive tackle that has quote unquote starting capability, you have to use a top three or four pick on that guy because the premium on the position is such that, you know, and so if you can basically get Matt Gano to be that guy, whether that's 2019, 2020 or whatever, without having to use you're saving yourself a top four pick. Right, that by getting it out as an undrafted free agent. The fact that Ryan Schrader turned into a starter meant that that was a draft pick between 2013 and 2018 on a tackle that the Falcons, a first or second round pick that the Falcons didn't have to use on that guy. You know? So, you know, that's what it's valuing. The same thing with Harlow. Like, if you can get Harlow to become a quality backup, that's a quality backup offensive lineman, you know, that can replace Ben Garland or Schweitzer or Levitre or whoever, you know, down the road, that you don't have to use another mid-round pick on in the future, and you can use that on a future player. So that's part of the reason why, you know, as someone who obsesses about, you know, these low-level roster battles every year and every offseason and complains endlessly about why did the Falcons cut this guy off the practice squad? Why did the guys not keep this guy? Why did the guys not let Jermaine Grace or Brian Hill go? It's for this reason, because down the road, it has a domino effect. Now, it may not be a huge domino effect, but it does impact you that if you can basically save draft assets by developing these undrafted free agents or being able to retain these mid and late round picks that you've already used, that's mid and late round picks that you don't have to use in the future. And then you can use those picks at other positions that can supplement your roster and make your team better. So that's why we stress about, or at least that's why I stress about all these roster stuff. And I suspect that, you know, the six of you listening to this podcast right now, you know, at least four of you are stressing about these things. Let's talk about the D-line. Let's talk about that ninth D-line battle, because that was a very compelling battle. As I've said a number of times over this preseason, I feel like John Cunningham, Justin Zimmer, and Garrison Smith have been competing for that, you know, basically that fifth D-tackle spot. Most likely to be the ninth D lineman. I don't feel like Wimbush. I don't feel like JT Jones are deserving of that spot. I feel like all three of these guys did more than enough to earn a roster spot, but you can only probably keep one of these guys. I really like what Cunningham, after he didn't play last week against Kansas City, I thought Cunningham came out and played very well against Miami. I think he's basically a poor man's Dejan Sinat, maybe even a middle-class man's Dejan Sinat. You got to like his power. He moves very well for his size. You saw him make that tackle on the screen pass. I don't think this was Justin Zimmer's best performance, but I think he'd done more than enough over the last two, three games to more than, you know, he's allowed to not be perfect for all four games. I think Garrison Smith was dominant in this game. He was absolutely destroying several of those. You know, obviously it's not as if Miami was putting their best players out there, but he was destroying several of those guys. He was eating up. He was absolutely dominant in this game. And I feel like, you know, of the three, if we're judging purely off of this game and purely off of other factors, he's probably the front runner of this trio. So I think he'll get the nod. Obviously, you know, I picked him in my roster prediction on Wednesday to be that sort of to fill that spot. But I think if the Falcons go with either of the other two, I would have no issues with that. I think both of those guys, again, have certainly played at a level. There's been some, you know, some people have been out there tweeting that he's not eligible for the practice squad. Maybe he's not. Maybe he is in terms of Garrison Smith. If he isn't, then that's even more reason to keep him on the roster, as far as I'm concerned. So ultimately, whether he's eligible for the practice squad probably won't make that much of a difference, assuming that he makes the team. I would hope also that, you know, if you keep Garrison Smith, you can still find a way to keep Cunningham and Zimmer on the practice squad. I know I think they kept two D tackles in Tanny Tupou and Joe Villano at the start of last year. I don't think they had five guys on the roster, though, but I could be misremembering. But I would love to see both of those guys kept, because I think all three of those guys certainly deserve that, have potential. You know, not to say that you're going to find a role for all three of those guys in the future, but through the power of competition, one of those guys should be able to rise up and be, you know, a potential replacement, possibly, to Terrell McClain, you know, next year if he's a free agent and he's allowed to walk or something like that. So you're getting future depth. Again, that's another role player down the road draft pick that you don't have to use on. So, you know, it wouldn't also shock me, though, that if not one, two, if all three of these guys, if they get cut, that they will get claimed on waivers by other teams, because that's how good they've been this preseason. There's more to talk about with some of these remaining roster battles. We'll talk about the six linebacker spot. We'll talk about the DBs. We'll talk about the practice squad in a moment. But I want to let you guys know first that Locked On Podcast Network is expanding with college shows. You can check out shows covering Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, Tennessee, Florida State, Oklahoma, Baylor, Ohio State, Penn State, and Oregon, and many more to come. Find them wherever you get your podcasts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So, you know, looking at the sixth linebacker spot, I think, you know, there were some issues with Jonathan Celestine. He didn't, you know, he showed some chinks in the armor, so to speak. But I still think he's the best of the bunch. So if the Falcons wind up keeping a sixth linebacker among this group already on the team, he's the obvious candidate. I do think Emmanuel Ellerby came out and played really well early in the game, flashed some potential. And I think, you know, I would probably have him leapfrog Richard Jarvis for my prediction for who's going to make the practice squad as like the quote unquote seventh linebacker. But I do think because Celestine, you know, missed a couple of tackles, got beaten coverage a couple of times, and just was not as perfect as he had seemingly been in the previous outings. I think it does open the door a little bit further for the possibility that the Falcons go out and look for a waiver wire guy, a veteran guy this weekend. Basically, I think they, you know, as I've explained before, I think they want a guy that has the ability to be a backup to Devondre Campbell at Sam linebacker, also be a guy that can be a sort of an insurance policy at that will spot in the event that Duke Riley and or Foye Olukun just don't live up to the expectations. Essentially, my expectation for what the Falcons want, they want a Nate Stupar. They want a guy that can play, be a backup at both the Sam and Will spot and also be a value on special teams. From what I gather, Stupar is not on the bubble in New Orleans. You know, Stoop Life, hashtag Stoop Life, probably is not returning to Atlanta. But basically, they want, you know, my expectation is that they want another sort of Nate Stupar type of guy. I think the knock on Celestine is he doesn't, I've said it before, but he doesn't necessarily fit
the ideal athletic profile that the Falcons look at the linebacker. They typically prefer guys with a lot more speed and range, and I don't think that's really Celestine's game. I think he's more of a downhill thumper type of guy, and that's why he's been so effective in certain areas, like in run defense through the preseason. But, you know, there's a little bit of issues in coverage. I think Ellerbe is much more that sort of prototypical fit, but certainly hasn't up till tonight hadn't really played like a guy that was sort of an ideal fit. So we'll see what shakes out with that. Moving on to the secondary, again, I think there's probably 9th and 10th DB spot. Prior to, you know, going into this game, I fully expected Ron Parker and Bleedy Ray Wilson to fill those spots. And you would have, if you told me that that wasn't going to be the case, I would have been shocked. I wouldn't have been completely floored, but I would have been like, really? Okay, that's weird. But coming out of this game, I'm like, okay, you know, I'm not as sort of confident in that. Whether or not Ron Parker's on the bubble, it was notable that he was one of the few, basically the only veteran player other than Austin Pastore that basically played in this game. So it suggests that maybe he's on the bubble. I don't quite get why he would be. I don't know why you would sign Ron Parker back in June simply to, quote unquote, kick the tires on him. I don't really feel like what are the other options the Falcons have for that forward safety. It was clearly a problem area until they signed Ron Parker. I feel like, you know, while Parker may have not been perfect in this game, I still think he wasn't poor in this game by any means. I feel like unless the Falcons are going to go out there and sign Eric Reed or somebody like that, like, or, you know, unless, you know, some other quality strong safety gets cut this weekend, you know, I don't feel like they're going to, it's likely that they'll find a better option than Ron Parker. Maybe that's possible, but, you know, Ron Parker's got 60 plus NFL starts, has played free safety, has played strong safety, has played outside corner, has played slot corner. He filled in at slot corner after the Bleedy Ray Wilson in against the Dolphins. I thought he did fine, at least when I was watching him at that slot corner, he did fine in that role. So, you know, he's got the versatility that you want as a fourth safety. He's the most versatile option that you could possibly have at that spot. I don't get why he would be cut, but, you know, the Falcons always do something weird. And speaking of Bleedy Ray, I think we'll have to wait and see how serious his shoulder injury. I think that's a shame, you know, and we talked about this going into the game, but there's always an injury or two that sort of derails somebody. And as I've said on Wednesday's episode, I thought Bleedy Ray has been the fourth best corner in camp this summer, in training and in preseason games, at least, behind Trufant, Alford, and Poole. He's outplayed Oliver. He's outplayed Justin Bethel. And it's a shame that he got injured in this game. Hopefully it's nothing serious. It's interesting to me that Leon McFadden did not play in this game. I'm unaware if Leon McFadden was nursing some sort of injury that would have kept him out of this game, or if he was, you know, so making him the one exception of the 46 guys that were inactive, and not being the guy that's a lock that sewn up a roster spot. But my expectation, like, you know, the idea, like, while, you know, I said this before, I think Leon McFadden has done some good stuff this preseason. I don't think I've seen enough to suggest that he's done more than Bleedy Ray to the point that he would basically have sewn up a roster spot when he's barely played, relative to what Bleedy Ray has done. So that would cause me. So my assumption is that there was an injury that we just didn't hear about prior, and that's why he didn't play. So we'll see about that. But, you know, Bleedy Ray got hurt. Malik Williams got hurt in this game. He also left a shoulder injury after a really strong performance. We'll talk about him in a bit. I think the injury to Bleedy Ray, also the question marks surrounding Parker, that opens the door for Chris Lammons. And we'll see if he takes one of their spots, potentially. When we talk about the 9th and 10th DB, you know, right now, I still, you know, again, I don't know what Wilson's injury is. I don't know if it's a season-ending injury. I don't know if it's the type of injury where he's going to miss a week. He's going to miss 6 weeks. If it's more than a week, then the chances are that the Falcons will put him on IR or come to an injury settlement sort of situation with him. But basically, he's not going to count towards their 53 if it's more than just a slight ding that's going to cause him to miss maybe one game. But if it's more than that, then the chances are that they'll move on, bring in somebody that can actually play next week or in or at least in the first two games of the season, maybe that's a guy like Lammons instead as that 53rd roster spot. So we'll see. You know, maybe the Falcons go out there and scour the waiver wire. Maybe it's McFadden that's the ninth or tenth defensive back. I don't know. But we can be pretty confident, you know, that there are five corners and three safeties that have definitely made the roster. Trufant, Alford, Poole, Oliver, Bethel, Casey, Allen, and Neal. And definitely the Falcons will keep at least one more, and probably, as I said earlier, in terms of a grab bag position, when you look at the talent, I don't see them, you know, I think it makes the most sense to keep an extra defensive back as a 10th guy. Whether that's a fifth safety, whether that's a sixth corner, we'll have to sort of see. Wrapping things up, talking about the practice squad, getting back to Malik Williams, he was probably the one true standout other than the defensive tackles in this performance. Maybe his performance allows him to leapfrog Justin Crawford for that fourth running back unlikely to be the practice squad. I don't think he'll make the roster. I just, there's no real, you know, again, when you have the arguably the best running back duo in the league, there's really no reason to keep, I mean, you can argue the only reason that you have a third running back is in the event of an injury, which given the nature of the running back position is likely to happen, but carrying a fourth running back on the roster is just kind of overkill at that point. So, you know, I don't see that necessarily happening for Malik Williams or Justin Crawford, but certainly one of those guys I think is definitely a lock to be on the practice squad. I would be shocked if the Falcons didn't keep one of those guys on the practice squad. We talked about this on Wednesday, but my thought process was Crawford would be the likeliest candidate to do so because we've seen Crawford consistently play ahead of Williams in the preseason, and we've seen Crawford consistently get work on special teams. I don't recall seeing Malik Williams out on special teams even on tonight. He certainly didn't play in the first three games on special teams. We'll have to sort of check the tape to confirm that, whether or not he played against the Dolphins on special teams. But as I've explained before, if you don't play on special teams and you're not a starter in, or a quarterback or an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman, you have to play special teams. So if you're the fourth-string running back, you have to play special teams. And the fact that Crawford has played special teams and Williams hasn't is indicative, insinuates, implies, whatever you want to say, that the Falcons coaching staff see Crawford as the fourth-string running back and not Williams. But again, Williams played really well. I think Williams has outplayed Crawford, at least on offense, throughout the preseason. That was in the first three games and certainly was the case against Miami in the fourth. So maybe the Falcons will look at it and say, you know, I got to whisper this because, you know, Keith Armstrong might hear me and fight me. But, you know, hashtag special teams doesn't matter. I don't know. Maybe in the case of Williams. So we'll see how that works out for them. If I was sort of reshuffling my practice squad, I'd probably boot Troy Mangin to the curb. I'd probably boot Reggie Davis. As I said earlier, I would probably boot Richard Jarvis and put Ellerby there. You know, if I was booting Reggie Davis, I'd probably put Devin Gray there. You might even put both Crawford and Williams on the practice squad. You know, again, that's probably overkill, but just because you want to have options, I guess, in the event that you do lose Tevin Coleman next year. And so now you have automatically, you just basically have four running backs ready to go, and you don't have to replace him in some, you know, reality, I guess. You don't have to work to replace him if you're comfortable that between Ito Smith and Justin Crawford and Malik Williams, you know, the combination of those three guys will replace Tevin Coleman, maybe. I don't know. So, you know, if I was guessing to wrap things up, if I was guessing at, you know, at a new 10-man practice squad, I would probably go Kurt Benkert. We'll stick with Justin Crawford. We'll go Devin Gray, Jamil Douglas, Justin Zimmer, John Cunningham, Emmanuel Ellerby, Chris Lammons. And then the last two spots, you know, I'm leaning towards Malik Williams. I'm leaning towards Ryan Neal. I'm still leaning there for Anthony Wimbush. His tackling was not great. He had two sacks. He had the quarterback dead to rights twice on sacks. Could not finish. He missed the tackle on one of the touchdowns. I can't remember if it was the first or second touchdown that Miami scored. So he needs to, you know, he needs to get stronger. you know, this is, goes back to what we talked about, like in June or whenever we talked about undrafted free agents. And like my thought was that Anthony Wimbush is a linebacker. It's very similar to what I think with Vic Beasley. Like, yeah, I just don't think you can achieve a high level of success putting 220-pound guys at defensive end. I know Wimbush is bigger than 220 pounds, but like 2 years ago, he was 220 pounds. You know, 2 years before, or really a year before, hell, when Vic Beasley was a rookie, you know, reportedly he was weighing like 220 pounds. So, like, I just don't think those guys can hold up in the NFL as 220-pound defensive ends going up against 320-pound offensive tackles. But, you know, if the Falcons keep Wimbush, they can move him to linebacker next year. They can keep him at D end and hope he, you know, puts on 15 pounds of muscle. So, I don't know. Those last two spots, let's just say Malik Williams and Wimbush over Neal. Okay, there you go. So, that's it, guys. We'll be back on Monday to actually talk about what Falcons' final roster decisions. Hopefully, if you've been listening all week, you've been listening for the last couple of weeks, probably not, you know, I'll sit there and be like, oh, you know, if you've been listening to the podcast for the last couple of weeks, you knew exactly how the roster was going to shake out. It was just really a question of one or two spots, and we'll see if that winds up happening. Now, I will say, you know, wrapping things up, if I do happen to get all 53 guys right from what I said on Wednesday, and note, I gave my roster projection before the final preseason game. If I get 53 guys, heck, if I get 52 guys out of 53, I'm going to sit here and be like, I'm a prophet, guys. Right, I'm a prophet. Like, and if the one guy I missed was Bleedy Ray Wilson because he got hurt, like, I'm going to sit here and be like, I'm a genius. I'm the smartest man in the world. And you guys have to believe me. That's what I'm going to spend, 25 minutes on Monday bragging about and tooting my own horn because I deserve it personally. You know, I have to feed my own ego. So I'm just giving you a warning. Now, if I wind up getting like 46 guys right, then whatever, you know, Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff did it out of spite because, you know, I came in with all the bravado. I don't know. But we'll talk on Monday. And then, you know, starting Tuesday, we're going to start pivoting towards this week one game. So look forward to that. We'll definitely be talking Eagles multiple times next week, starting on Tuesday. So look forward to that, guys. Until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.